Okay, ladies, welcome to Makkah B'Patish Part 2. We're going to be talking about some practical applications. Makkah B'Patish sounds boring. That's why I didn't title it Makkah B'Patish. I talked about what we're going to be talking about, and these are just applications of Makkah B'Patish. Tonight we're going to talk about applications regarding clothing, like folding clothing, like cleaning, some aspects of cleaning clothing. But let's just get a background review of what we did last week. Last week we learned that Makkah B'Patish is the 38th out of the 39 malachas. Makkah B'Patish is not any specific act. Literally, it says banging with a hammer. But that's not what the malacha is. The malacha is any act that happens to finish something that you were making. If you're making something and you put the finishing touch on it, that constitutes Makkah B'Patish. You could have it come in many different forms, which we have discussed, we will discuss, but there's no specific prohibitively prescribed action that constitutes Makkah B'Patish. It's not like when you cook, so you turn on a flame, that's usr. You put food on a fire, that's usr. You stir food that's cooking, that's... No, we're not talking about any specific action. Any, within the whole gamut of making something new that you do in order to put the finishing touches on creating something or making something, that will constitute Makkah B'Patish. We gave a bunch of situations last week which we began to go into. We talked about separating pages from a book with the pages weren't, the edges of the pages weren't cut. That would be an issa d'oraisa, perhaps. Then we got into the fascinating world of shoes. And we said if you have a shoe that's new, that rhymes, if you have a shoe that's new and you place laces into it, so you're taking a shoe that is not really usable, that has never been finished because it never had the laces, and by inserting those laces, you're making it into a fully usable shoe. And that will constitute Makkah B'Patish, and that will be usur. We also saw the extension of that halacha is that if you have, let's say, we talked last week about a mint green sweater or something like that that has a sash or a belt that comes matching perfectly with that outfit, so you're putting that finishing touch again. If you're going to attach a sash to that sweater, and let's say there are the loops on the sides, you put it through those loops, if it's going to stay there, you're putting the permanent finishing touches on this outfit, that also will be an extension of the shoelace issue. You're taking something that, I guess you could wear a sweater without the belt, and it looks funny because there are loops that have nothing in them, but if you put that sash through it, that's putting the finishing touch in a permanent sense, if you're going to leave it there. That's why I said it's the kind that has a matching sash, because if it's like a black sash that could go, black belt that could go with any of 12 different sweaters, so there's nothing permanent about it, but if it's unique to this specific outfit, that might be Makkah B'Patish. We also mentioned Rabbi Ribiat in his picture book, which if I'm not mistaken is one of the best sellers at the YU Sfarim sale. We all like picture books at all ages. So he has an extension of that idea. If you have a necklace and you see, you go to your jewelry box and you have a bunch of chains, and then you notice there's a little pendant that has a little heart on it, or a little smiley, or a little magadavit, or your name, or whatever it is, and you say, wow, it would go really well on this chain, and you put the pendant, you're not attaching, you're not tying, you're not screwing in, you're just slipping the pendant, or the ring of the pendant, over the chain with the intention of leaving it there, because you think it looks good. That would be a similar application of putting a finishing touch with a sense of permanence, again, if you intend to leave it there. And that, Rabbi Ribiat suggests, would be an application of Makkah B'Patish. The end of last week, we talked about opening bottles on Shabbos, and the issue there is creating a new cap, meaning creating, until now, let's talk about first metal caps. Metal caps, the way the metal cap is... Again, we're not talking about, we'll talk about plastic in a second, we're talking about metal caps that the edge of it either breaks off or expands. Until you turn it and open it and either break off the ring below or expand the bottom part of that metal cap, it's completely connected. It's all one big piece. And it's one big piece, not in a turn-on, a screw-on cap purpose right now. It is a cap. It is a sealing cap, but it's not a cap that screws on and off easily. And therefore, when you open it and you either spread out those pieces of metal on the bottom or you break off the ring that was completely connected to it until now, you're now creating a new screw-on cap, meaning a cap that screws on and off easily. And therefore, Rav Shlomo Zalman says that metal caps on top of soda bottles, which they don't make, but they used to make the Kedem grape juice bottles like that, that would be also to open on Shabbos. However, when you have a plastic bottle cap, like we have in all the Pepsi and all the Coca-Cola and all the other bottles, and the new Kedem grape juice bottles because of this issue, are plastic, so there the ring was not totally connected, like one fused together piece. That was a cap. Rather, there was a plastic cap that was always a screw-on and off cap. And attached to that was, you know, kept it in place so that you can't, so you know that it wasn't tampered with, is this other plastic ring. If you break off that ring, that's fine, because you already had this plastic turn-on, screw-on, screw-off cap that was already there before Shabbos, so you didn't create anything new. That was all last week. Just to finish last week, we pointed out that Rav Shlomo Zalman in that same tshuva was makel in regards to opening up a soda can where you have the tab and you open it and you flip the tab and it breaks the thing. Rav Shlomo Zalman says even though it is cutting in a place that is a convenient way for you to drink, that's not considered making a Pesach, it's not considered building, it's not considered makel b'patish, it is permitted, said Rav Shlomo Zalman, to open up a soda can on Shabbos. That was all reviewing last week's material. Baruch Ata Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam Shehakol Nehiyah B'Dvaro. Let's, just by the way, just one side point as far as Makkah B'Patish. Let's say you have a squeaky door. So by you putting oil on a squeaky door, is that building? You're not building. There's no bona. You're not attaching anything that was previously not attached. You didn't build, but however, that might be considered makeh b'patish to oil a squeaky door. So even though we all wouldn't oil a squeaky door on Shabbos, but as far as understanding why, that would be an application, makeh b'patish, because you're putting the finishing touch on this squeaky door. Yeah. Michal is asking that there are a number of other malachas besides makeh b'patish. One of them might be mechatech, that you're cutting on a perforated area. Apparently, Rav Shlomo Zalman understands that that's not considered cutting on a perforated area. I'm not sure why. Okay, so what I want to talk about for the next 3 minutes is something that happens, is more of a shaila in Eretz Yisrael, but it is a shaila here. Anyone familiar with Yo Baby, or what's it called, yogurt, Yo Baby? Yeah, so they come like 4 in a pack or 6 in a pack and you crack, or the Swiss Miss chocolate puddings, right?
You.
Right, so this is, you know, you'll be, okay. Or Milkies and Eretz Yisrael, you crack them, you crack the yogurt containers apart, one from another. So, what happens here? What did you have beforehand, what do you have now? Beforehand you had this, I don't know what to call it, this unit of 6 yogurts, and you're making each individual yogurt cup usable by snapping it off. So there are 2 issues we have to discuss. One is mechatech, which is the issue, cutting on a set, perforated, clearly defined, you know, marking, which is just like they cut things in the basin when they were preparing the Mishkan, when they were building the Mishkan. Where did they have to cut on the lines? When they made the what? The curtains and the gadim for the Kohen, for the Kohanim. So they had to cut along very specific lines, and that's why it's only Aser Daraisa on Shabbos to cut along very specific lines. But if you just rip something not on a specific line, a specific outline, that's not ever going to be Aser Daraisa. Darabanan maybe, but certainly not Daraisa. But here, one might argue that when I snap those 2 yogurt things, you know, those 2 yogurt containers apart, that is Mechatech, I'm snapping it along a straight, perforated, prepared line. So that's what, who says? Who doesn't like that? Rav Ozner. Rav Shmuel Vozner from Bnei Brak, one of the greatest Gedolei HaPosim that we have now, who is alive, Baruch Hashem, should have strength, says that there's a problem of mechatech to snap those off. I don't know if that's the accepted general opinion. The opinion that we're going to start with is Rebbe Yashiv. Rebbe Yashiv Zatzal said that to snap apart those 2 containers will be aser because that is makeh b'patish. What's makeh b'patish? You're putting the finishing touch on something that you're sort of making anew. You've got this conglomeration of yogurts together from the store. They're not ready to be used. What's the last thing that a person, a consumer, has to do in order to make them, yes, usable? Snap them apart. So you're taking something that's not as easily usable to make it, you know, consumer-friendly, individual portioned yogurts or Swiss chocolate puddings. And that, says Rabbi Yasha, would be a violation of Makkeh B'Patish, because you're putting the finishing touch on this conglomerate, I don't have a better word, conglomeration of yogurt cups that the company sent us. Yeah. So hold on a second. Reb Shlomo Zalman argues in Reb Yasha, I don't know if this is where you're going, but he says, Reb Shlomo Zalman says, wait a second. What's Makkeh B'Patish? Makkeh B'Patish is not just putting the finishing touch, it's putting the finishing touch and making the item usable. And by these yogurts, even if you don't snap them apart, they're still usable. Right? Let's say you didn't come to my shiur, and you thought that you can't open up, you can't snap those apart. And you really had a craving Shabbos morning for a yogurt. Or at Shalosh Shudas, you have a craving for a yogurt. So you didn't come to my shiur, so you didn't know that it might be mutter to snap apart. So you didn't snap it apart. So what do you do? You just peeled it off and had two, right? Not so terrible. So they're very usable, says Rav Shlomo Zalman. They're perfect. Those cups are perfectly usable. They're fully formed cups. You want to have a yogurt cup? There's a fully formed yogurt cup. It's not like you're finishing making the yogurt cup a fully formed yogurt cup right now. It has been fully formed as a yogurt cup. It is completely usable. You're not making it usable by snapping it off. You could use it perfectly while it's still attached. And therefore, Rav Shlomo Zalman says that's not going to be considered like Makkeh B'Patish. Because if you remember correctly, last week when we spoke about a source in the Gemara for Makkeh B'Patish, the Gemara mentioned the case of Poteach Beit HaTzavar. What did we say Beit HaTzavar was? A collar, right? In the olden days, the way they made shirts, I don't have the details, but they made shirts without an opening for, you know what I just realized when I was teaching this topic in my shiur? Do you remember when you went to camp and you got stuck in the dining room and there's a terrible downpour? And you have to get back to your bunk. So you remember what you did? No, you didn't have a coat with you put on your hood. Garbage bags. You take a garbage bag, put it over your body, and then you pop your head through, right? Popping your head through is Pasech Beis HaTzavar. But they didn't just do it with garbage bags. Apparently, in the olden days, that's how they made shirts. They made shirts sealed on top. I guess it's easier. And pulled it over their heads like a garbage bag. That was Pasech Beis HaTzavar. And the Gemara says clearly that is an Isser from the Torah, to pop that head through and to make that neckline, that collar, that whatever you want to call it, that hole for the head, the hole for the neck, the Beis HaTzavar. Says Rav Shlomo Zalman, there, the shirt was not usable until you popped your head through. That's why breaking that neck, breaking that that hole for the neck, that's going to be Makkeh B'Patish. But here, when you break the two parts of the two yogurts apart, they were usable even beforehand. You could access the yogurt, you could use the yogurt, you could eat the yogurt and use it as a cup, even without breaking the two parts together. And therefore, Rav Shlomo Zalman says that one is permitted l'chatchila to break apart, snap apart yogurts on Shabbos. For whatever reason, he's not worried about l'chatech. And it's also not considered Makkeh B'Patish because it already was usable. Before you snapped it off, you didn't make it usable like Rabbi Yashiv thought. And therefore, again, if you want to avoid it because Rav Ozner and Rabbi Yashiv do asur it, Rav Ozner for mechateich reasons, for cutting on a straight perforation reason, and Rabbi Yashiv for Makkeh B'Patish reasons, but Rav Shlomo Zalman does permit totally to snap them apart, so I'm assuming Shmir Shah, I didn't see inside, do I have it here? I'm assuming Shmir Shah was Kilchasa probably would go with Rav Shlomo Zalman, but I don't, maybe he doesn't talk about it. But so certainly, if you want to be makhman for yourself, gesinta hate, but Medina, there's certainly room to be makel, and if you see somebody else doing it, or somebody saying they're just going to snap the yogurts apart, you know, keep your mouth closed. They have every right to rely on Rav Shlomo Zalman.
Didn't we say originally Makkeh B'Patish is taking a hammer and straightening out like all the bumps in that cup or something? And the cup is still usable even with dented and unattractive. Just like these yogurts are still, it's not pleasant to eat, like,
you're asking a very good question. You're saying, we saw some of the Rishonim said last week that Makkeh B'Patish is, let's say I'm working with metal, I'm making a metal cup, and I have a metal cup, and I want to straighten the bent parts out, straighten the dents. So I bang the dents in, that would be Makkah B'Patish on a Doraisa level. There, you're saying it's already completely made. It's completely usable already. I guess the answer to your question is that it's not usable in its, in the normal way of using a cup that doesn't have dents. Meaning, of course, you could use it. It does have a base kibbutz. It does have a concave, receptacle area that holds liquids. But I guess while it has those dents, that's not the kind of kiddush cup you'd use. I guess you wouldn't eat a yogurt if you had guests over the way I'm suggesting, I hear that. That's a good question. I hear.
And I'm assuming then, obviously, if there's writing on the top, you wouldn't be able to break them apart. It could mean
that you're saying what happens if there are words, and as you snap them apart, you're actually breaking the words apart. That's a good point. I assume that the Mahadran yogurts in Israel probably thought about that. And they probably don't, Swissness might not have thought about it. But it's words that you're cutting words in the middle when you snap it. Okay, so that could, I hear. So then you can't even peel off the tops. But they're different sheets of paper. We'll have to wait till we get up to Kosev. That might be in about 4 or 5 years. None of you will be here by then. But yeah. Danon Yogurts also has this problem. Okay, we'll have to write to Danon. Send him a link. Rina.
Is there an issue? Sometimes tea bags come.
Great question. So what happens when you have your Celestial Seasonings tea bags, which all come as double two together, Celestial Seasonings, yeah.
You could use them, just put two tea bags in.
That's what I do. Yeah, I do put two tea bags in. What? No, Celestial Seasonings are all herbal. They're not even teas. They're herbal essences. There are legal, rules about this. I went to Boulder, Colorado, my friends. I'm an expert in teas. So at Boulder, Colorado, in the Celestial Seasonings tea factory, which we did go on a tour of, because it was raining, so we couldn't hike the Rockies, so we just went to this instead. Fascinating tour. So in order to be tea, it has to have tea leaves in it, but then it has caffeine. The Celestial Seasonings are called herbal essences because they're not tea. They don't have tea, and therefore they're legally not allowed to call it tea, and those are caffeine-free. So you can have two. Yeah.
I'll have to.
I think separating that would be chemichatech. That would be like tearing on a perforation. I think tearing a double tea bag that's connected by perforated perforation, I think that would be a serious problem, perhaps in Issa Daraisa. He says it somewhere. I don't remember. They discuss it, why Rav Shlomo Zalman doesn't consider it mechatech when you snap it apart, but for whatever reason he doesn't consider it mechatech. Yeah. I just don't have it easily accessible. I guess not. I assume not. Yeah. Okay. Next. Yeah. Oh, yeah, if you have contact lenses that the two, or sets of two, or you're saying even more, I'm from the sets of two that are connected. So contact lenses aren't so bad because you could usually peel off the bottom part that peels off, even if you leave the two pieces attached. But you're right, I wouldn't snap the two contact lenses a separate one from another along that perforation. I would avoid that. But it's not so terrible because you could still peel it off. I'm sorry? Yeah. Leave the two contact lens containers connected and just peel off the foil on the bottom of it.
If it accidentally snaps with your peels, are you going to wear something? I mean, I know it's...
Oh, you're dead. Oh, my gosh. You fry. For all of eternity. Eternity is very long. If you did it, you didn't do it on purpose. Like anything else that happens. Probably not even a show gig. It's probably less than a show gig. If you were trying to peel it off and it was specifically trying not to break them, and they broke, that's probably even less than a show gig.
Like, should you just say, like, oh, I'll just wear my glasses? Or should you say, well, probably won't happen, so okay?
I would assume it's kedai to run a test drive at least once in your life to know if it's definitely going to break.
It's not that bad at all.
So I don't think that they break regularly. If it happens to break because you slipped while you were doing it and your hand, whatever, I don't even know if you have to do tshuva on that. It's actually serious. If you do something that's less than shogi, it's called misasik. If you do something, like when you yawn and you lean your hand back and it flicks the light, that's not called turning on the light for shogi. That's less than shogi. That's called misasik, doing something when you're not even intending to do. You don't even have to, I don't even think you have to do tshuva on that. Shogeg, if you turn it on because you forgot today was Shabbos, and you walk to the bathroom all groggy in the morning, and you flick the light on, that might be shogeg, and you do have to do tshuva on shogeg. You have to be a karban chatas if you do something b'shogeg. That's because you intended to do it, you just didn't realize it was Shabbos. You intended to do it, you didn't realize that it's aser. But if you didn't even intend to do the action, you just leaned back and you flicked on a light, or you were peeling off the foil and you snapped it by mistake, that's probably even less than shogeg. I don't even know if it's obligated to have tshuva done on it. Okay, next, moving along, we finished with yogurts. Now, let's get a little bit into, start with clothing. So, before we get into practical applications of clothing, the source in the Gemara, I don't remember if we mentioned last week or we didn't. The Gemara in Shabbos, Ayin Hayam and Bay, 75b, I'm not going to read it in Aramaic because I don't understand the Aramaic words, but I'll tell you what it says. It says that you have to sort of imagine weaving a garment. Picture you have a loom, and assume it's vertical, and you have your strings going this way, you have strings going this way, all, you know, up, down, under, over, in and out, in and out. And at some point, you tighten the strings, and you have a bolt of fabric. Now, what happens when you have a large loom that's standing in the room or outside? What happens when wind blows little, I don't know, pine needles, thorns, all kinds of particles in the air? Well, they get caught in the weaving, and then ultimately you make a coat out of that, or a jacket, or a shirt out of that. You end up with a shirt that has little thorns, or little pine needles, or little whatever else is flying through the air, and got caught in that weave. So the Gemara in Shabbos Ayin Hay says that somebody who pulls out those little thorns or pine needles or whatever those little tiny things that got caught in the strands as you're weaving or as you're sewing. Chayev is a code word for Asur D'oraisa. Mishumaka bepatish. That's going to be to pull out the pine needles from the shirt that's finished is Maka bepatish. Says the Gemara, as long as only talking about a case that you're makpid, that you're particular, that it bothers you. Like, it's not just, you know, some people, you know, once in a while you have a little thorn or pine needle in somewhere in your jacket, it doesn't really bother you. If somebody really bothers them, or there's a lot of them there so that it looks a little bit weird, then it would be a person who pulls out those little chips or pine needles or whatever these little things that got caught from the wind, that would be an Issa D'oraisa of Makkah B'Patish. So, excellent question. You're asking why isn't it borer? I assume because it's not like a tarovas, meaning they're identifiable. It's sort of like, you know, when we talked about things in water, that water and solids and liquids are disparate, so some suggest that it's not borer to separate one from the other, to take something out of water because it's so different. So if you have a pine needle in a jacket, it's not a mixture. I mean, I was actually thinking about your question. I'm suggesting what I think the terrors might be. But it's an excellent question. So, what you have here is a paradigm. You have a paradigm that if you have a jacket, a shirt, that's finished, it's completely made, it's knitted and sewn, or it's completely ready to wear, but there's something that makes it not wearable, or there's something attached to it, or connected to it, or about it, that you just have to do a little tiny crook, and you'll make it wearable, that is considered makkah b'patish. So, did you ever, I don't know how it works with the women, with hems or whatever, but let's say I get a new pair of pants, I buy a suit. So I get a new pair of pants. The way they sell men's suit pants, and maybe women's suit pants also, I wouldn't know. The way they sell men's suit pants is the bottom, the cuffs, are not tailored. Meaning, let's say you need a leg that's 30 inches long, they come 37 inches long. So this way, anybody who needs one from 30 inches, 28 inches, 30, 32, 33, 30, could all just tailor it at whatever length they need. And they put the cuff at that point. Now, when you go to the tailor, and they take a little needle and take a piece of chalk and they measure it on you and they take a piece of chalk and they mark where they have to sew it. Maybe you're familiar, I just don't know how it works with women's clothing, but that's how it works with guys' pants that have to be tailored. So, says the Shmir Shalos Kilchasa, you get the pants back from the tailor. They're ready to wear, right? Except, you have to wipe off that chalk. Wiping off the chalk is putting that finishing touch on a pair of pants that make them usable. I think everybody's makpid not to go to shul with a white line on the bottom of their cuff that shows that they just got back from the tailor. It looks weird. No one does that. So that's a case of makpid. And therefore, if you would wipe off that chalk, forgetting any washing issues and malabing issues, which is a totally different discussion, but if you would just wipe off that chalk ever so lightly, just to get, if there's a little chalk there, you give a little wipe and rub it off, that would be no different from a halachic perspective as pulling out those pine needles. If you're makpid about your particular to not walk around with chalk marks on your pants, that would be probably makpid b'patish, perhaps aser d'oraisa, to wipe off that chalk mark from the cuffs. One thing that I wanted to do a little research on, because it's very applicable halach l'maisa, I just didn't get a chance to, and I apologize, is let's say you have a new outfit. And usually this doesn't happen with new outfits, but when you have old outfits, you put them in a wash or some sweaters, if they're not great quality, they start to pill or they start to get lint on them. So is pulling off the lint going to be putting a finishing touch on something? Now, if it's something that you've worn so many times, you're not putting, you wear it all the time, it has lint on it, that I don't know about. But let's say you got a brand new thing, and for whatever reason, this kind of outfit, are there any kinds of clothes that sort of come with lint on them? No? Still my thunder. Right. Okay, let's say there's a kind of thing that you sort of just have to pull the pieces of lint off before you wear it. That might also be a kind of makkah b'patish. Sorry? Would it be mukta? Would the lint itself be mukta? I don't know if lint would be mukta. It's a good question. Is lint mukta? Is lint mukta? I know it's buttled to your jacket, so you're just touching the jacket, your sweater. That's a good question to think about. Is lint mukta? Sorry, it's a good question to think about. I really am not sure. I have to think about it. But I looked up quickly in the... we'll have to do some more research about taking off lint on Shabbos and how what the parameters are in terms of new clothing versus old clothing. That's something that still we have to research, just raising the question. Yes? Yeah, let's talk about that right now. That's the next topic. Removing tags from clothing. There you go. Okay, removing tags from clothing. So, this is an interesting question because... first of all, I've seen so many people walk around with a tag still on clothing, hoping nobody notices. I'm not going to say anything because it's embarrassing. But, okay, so would most people, let's say, certainly if it's on the outside of the clothing, it's something that your mock put on not to wear clothing that still have the tags on it, right? Fine. Except if you're in high school and it's a designer brand, whatever. Big J. Okay, forget that. On one hand, you could say that when you take off the tag of clothing, you're making something that wasn't wearable into being wearable. That's just like opening up that's like poseach beis hatzavah. You're opening up the collar. You're taking a shirt that was pretty much finished, now you're making it wearable. So if I pull off the tags, I'm taking a shirt or an outfit that I couldn't wear, and now it's wearable. So maybe that would be makkah b'patish, just by taking off these tags. Now I want you to know, Rosh Shlomo Zalman writes that the ripping of the tag off, that's not the ripping is not an issue. For whatever reason he holds that this ripping, again, ripping we have to learn another time, and I know that some of these issues are also, a lot of things are related to Korea, but that's not, for whatever reason Rosh Shlomo Zalman says the ripping of the tag, ripping of the tag off, the garment or that little plastic, whatever they call it, what do they call it? You know that hard plastic that you try to bite off and then it ends up hurting your tooth and then you just go get a scissor anyway. You should just not hurt your tooth on it. You all know what I'm talking about. So that he holds is not korea. It's not ripping. It's not a problem of ripping. But should it be a problem of makkah b'patish? So here, Rav Shlomo Zalman has the following logic. When we spoke about taking those pine needles or those thorns out of the weave to make the beged wearable, Rashi over there said that the people who make, you know, the tailors, when they make their shirt, they want to be able to sell it. The last thing that they have to do before they sell it, they want to be able to sell it, right? So the last thing that they do before they sell it is they try to pull out these, little thorns that make it look not so great. But the point is that you're not going to sell it like that. You have to get the thing out so that you could sell the shirt without any splinters in it. But here, is this garment a finished garment? Meaning when it leaves the store, does the storekeeper want the tag on it or he doesn't want the tag on it? Of course he wants the tag on it. That's how he wants to have it in the store. And you buy it and you're taking home a piece of clothing with a tag on it. That's the finished product that the manufacturer made or the storekeeper, you know, wants it to be. That you walk home with a sweater that says Macy's, $174 on sale for $14.52, $14.49, whatever. Right? That's part of the market. You know, that's all part of what it is to have a tag on something. That you want, at least in the manufacturer, that is the finished product. The finished product is not the clothing, you know, without the tag. The finished product is the clothing with the tag. And therefore, it is already finished with the tag. It's not that you, by you taking off the tag, you're now making it a finished shirt. Just the opposite. It was finished before you pulled off the tag, because that's how the stores want to have it. The stores want to have a shirt with tags on it. That is the finished product from the store's perspective. And therefore, Rosh Shlomo Zalman suggests that it would, and this is how, is this in Shmir Shabbos? I don't remember. And therefore, it is mutter lichatchila, believe it or not, it is mutter lichatchila to pull off, to rip off clothing tags, price tags, that are on clothing on Shabbos, and it is not similar to the other cases that we mentioned of making a something that's not wearable into wearable, because here it's not something wrong with the beged, it's not something that the beged is lacking, it's not something that the fabric is has a problem with it, it's not something that there's something wrong that you're going to fix. No, it is perfectly, the shirt or the sweater or the outfit is perfect. It's just the way the storekeeper wants it with a tag on it, and therefore it has already been finished. The tag is just part of the piece of clothing. And therefore it is mutar lechatchila, paskens Rosh Shlomo Zalman, to rip off the price tags, the brand name tags, that will be mutar lechatchila to rip off on Shabbos. Yeah. Yeah, you're asking a good question. You're asking why does it depend on how it's supposed to be sold? Why don't we look at how it's supposed to be worn? That's a different issue. When the wine bottle with a metal cap is just a problem that you're creating a new kli that wasn't there before. You never had a twisty, turny screw on cap before. You made a new twisty, turny screw on cap. Here, the question is just, did you make the shirt wearable or was it wearable before? So there was a shirt that was sort of wearable, but you just wouldn't wear it like that. Now you're wearing a shirt, now you have a shirt that you would wear. But the shirt was already there. It's not like you made a new kli. But you're asking, why do we look at it from the perspective of the store, not perspective from the perspective of the consumer? It's a good question. I think they seem to discuss it. I don't have it in front of me now. It's a good point. Okay, any questions about this? Yes. So you could, if it's glued on, you could just peel it off. You could definitely peel it off. If it's connected with those plastic things, you could rip that plastic thing, like with your tooth, that never works. You could, I think, do that. Could you rip off the paper? I think you should be able to rip off the paper also. Not on any perforation, but just to rip the paper off, yeah.
You can probably use the scissors.
So using scissors, so you're saying, is this considered, what? Kitchen shears. So you're saying if they're not mukta, right, if they're not mukta, you might be able to use kitchen shears or something like that. A knife, certainly a knife. If you have a sharp, serrated knife, that's a great way to cut off those things on Shabbos. Okay, that could be. Once the tag is cut off, it's just like a piece of garbage, and it might just be mukta. There's no purpose to it. I hear that. Excellent question. I thought I might have mentioned something last week. Maybe I didn't. Maybe I got confused with the other shear. But If you have, and again, if you buy, certainly with men's suits, two things. First of all, when you buy a new suit, the pockets, mine still are, I never opened them. The pockets are sealed, probably so you don't, I mean, for me it's good, because like if you ever go someplace where there's no air, you know you can't have something in your pocket because you don't have a pocket. It would be good if I did that with like, if kids' clothing came like that, so this way they can't like go home from kiddushes with like candy stuck in their pocket. I don't have to like search their socks. Whatever. I guess different kids are different. There's not enough room in their pockets so they have to stuff their socks, or they know I'm going to check their pockets so they have to stuff their socks. Okay, that's for another time. So if a person would open this pocket that I have closed right here on Shabbos, I think that would be clearly similar to the case of Poseach Beis HaTzavar, or perhaps clearly similar to the case of pulling out the pine needles to put the finishing touches on the garment. I think that would be also Daraisa perhaps. Similarly, there's a vent in the back of a suit. These two parts on some suits when you buy them, or raincoats, like this rain, not this one, a raincoat that has also a similar vent, like a, that separates, I guess women's skirt, pleated skirt, not pleated skirt, but like, what they call a vent? Slit, right, if a woman's skirt has a slit in the back, so I don't know if, I don't know, there's some brands or expensive brands, or if you want like finely tailored ones that this slit is connected, you have to, okay, great. So cutting that little string to open up the slit would be a problem, definitely. 100% problem. Possibly Daraisa of Makah B'Patish. Even if we would say that you're not going to rip anything, even if it's just you sort of have to pull the string out. It's not really connected, it's not really attached, it's not really cutting anything. Just pulling that string out is the finishing touch that makes it from normal people wouldn't wear like this to now it's readily wearable. That would be an Isser, probably Daraisa of Makah B'Patish. Thank you. And it comes out by itself. Should you avoid wearing a skirt that has the slit still has its the string in it? If it's definitely going to come out, will that be? That's a complicated question. I don't know the answer right now. On one hand, it gets into psik resh. On the other hand, I don't know the answer right now. Sorry, it's a good question. If you should avoid wearing a skirt that has that string in the slit, that might come out as you walk. I don't know the answer. Okay, let's talk about one other application, which again, with men's pants is very applicable. I don't know how it works with, I think, yeah. Women's pleated skirts. I think we mentioned it. Did we mention it last week at all? What?
Yeah, you mentioned holding a special way, but with pleated skirts, you don't really.
Pleated skirts, you just put flat on the, you just put it down flat. Fine. So with men's pants, the leg is pressed, and there's like one crease in the front and one crease in the back. And if you sort of just throw the pants down on the floor, like your brothers probably do, so after a little while, that pleat will lose its, that crease will lose its sharp crease and won't look as nice and new. So the best way to do it is to hang it up on the crease. That's how you, right? You hang, I don't know, maybe not right. You hang something up so that the crease stays the way the crease should be, and then you have the crease staying where it should be. So, it's a beautiful tshuva. The Rebbe Shmuel Vosner, I think, in Bnei Brak, says, he has the following tshuva. Everybody is makel to sort of hang up these pants in a way that they end up on the crease. Why isn't that makah b'patish? So he says, maybe it should be makah b'patish, but since everyone does it, let me try to give you a bunch of reasons why we could at least be melamed zechus. And say that what people are doing is probably not so bad. But since pleated skirts don't work like that, I don't have to bore you with how men's pants work. We'll save the men's pants for a different shear, for a different audience. Just be aware that to do things in such a way that you get the pleats to stay pleated, that might be something that sort of you're trying to put, I don't know, like putting a finishing touch on something. Just be aware that there's an issue. But I want to finish up, we'll see, either finish today or we'll do one thing afterwards, is a different application of Makah B'Patish. Now this Makah B'Patish is not regarding fabrics, but I mentioned I think last week and once earlier today that some of the Rishonim talk about Makkah v'Patish when I... Rashi, I think there's a Mishnah in the Perek Klal Gadol in Shabbos, Masechet Shabbos, that lists, there's one Mishnah that lists the third nine Malachas. And there Rashi gives you a quick synopsis of what each Malacha means, of many of them. By Makkah v'Patish, if I'm not mistaken, Rashi explains, what is Makkah v'Patish? Makkah v'Patish... No, it's not the Rashi. I'm sorry. A different Rishon explained the Makkah v'Patish is the following. Like we mentioned earlier, you have you're a metal worker. You're making some kind of metal, a becher, a silver, a kiddush cup, and you have the right shape. It's a cup. It's the way the cup should be. You look at it. It looks beautiful. And then you see that there's something out of line. Something a little bit not even, a little bit bent in too much this way, bent out that too much that way. So you take a hammer, a light hammer, a mallet, a soft hammer. You bang it to just even it out to get it shaped the way it's supposed to be. That's what he calls Makkah v'Patish. Taking that and applying it, whenever you bend metal to serve a purpose that you need, that would be an application of the Makkah v'Patish that I just described, of bending the metal when you make a new metal kli. So where is it that we bend metal in our Shabbos activities? So I'll give you a few examples. Let's say you have a low quality, let's say for your apartment, you don't want to spend a lot on silverware. So you buy one of those amazing savings, $4.99 for a set of 72 pieces of silverware, right? It's a set of 8 times whatever it is, and it's very low quality. So what happens when you stick the fork into the chicken? Well, depending on how soft your chicken is, it might bend a little too much. So what do you want to just bend it back? Are you creating a kli? No. Are you doing anything new? No. You're just bending the metal to make it more usable, to make it more easily usable. That is a serious isser of Makkah v'Patish. Where else does it happen? Let's say you have a metal hanger that you want to, I don't know, it got a little bent out of shape, and you like this hanger, and you want to sort of just bend the tip just so it fits properly on your hanging bar. That would be Makkah v'Patish, to bend the metal hanger. Let's say it's the opposite. Let's say you want to bend the metal hanger so you could, I don't know, get something from a corner or underneath the refrigerator. That would also be Makkah v'Patish. You're also bending the metal bending a metal bar into a shape that will be convenient for yourself. I didn't think of this, but the Svarim actually talk about this. If you have an earring that gets a little bit bent out of shape, I hate when that happens. It's the worst thing in the world. It ruins my Shabbos. And you want to sort of like bend it a little, crimp the earring a little. Does that people do that? I don't know. Okay, fine. You want to crimp the earring a little bit so that it will fit. I don't know, fit on your ear, I guess, or wherever else you put your earrings. That also would be an isser of this kind of application of Makkah v'Patish. The source of this actually is a Magen Avram. Magen Avram is one of the Mefarshim on the Shulchan Aruch. And I think he lived quite early, meaning after the Shulchan Aruch, in like the 1700s. And the Magen Avraham is talking about in the context of shoelaces. He's actually the one who talks about shoelaces on new shoes. And there I think he says that when you have a machat, you have a pin, and the pin is not straight, you want to straighten out the pin, or a safety pin, a regular pin, safety pin, whatever it is, and you just a little adjustment to even a minor adjustment. Even if you're not making a new thing, it's not changing something from one form to another form, just making a minor adjustment to bend metal in a certain way, that would be Makkah v'Patish. Very practical application. Sometimes, those of you who wear glasses, sometimes something bends. You want to, sometimes there are different parts that could bend. Sometimes the bridge between the two eyepieces bends. You want to bend it back so it could, you know, sometimes you like fall asleep on your bed, you're reading a book, you fall asleep, and like it sort of smushes to the shape of your face, which is not good. So you want to just bend it back. Sometimes, I think the temple bars they're called. I think they're called temple bars. The temple, because they go over this is your temple, so it goes over your temple. It's a bar. So the bending the temple bars back also would be a problem of Makkah v'Patish. Any other bending metal that comes up in real life?
Probably like twist ties for sandwich.
Ooh, I didn't even think of that. So there's a famous story. I didn't prepare twist ties. I don't know if that would be Makom Patish, because there, that's a good question. There's a famous, famous story. Famous story. Oh, it's a wonderful story. It just shows you a little bit about Rebbe Yashiv and his precision. The famous story about Rebbe Yashiv. Rebbe Yashiv was asked about twist ties on Shabbos. So a guy comes to Rebbe Yashiv, and he approaches Rebbe Yashiv and says, if you have these twist ties and you go, you know, to twist them, is that mutter? He says, mutter. And then a few weeks later, a few years later, whatever it was, the guy asks the same shaila and says, if you have these twist ties and you go, you know, is that mutter? And he says, it's usser. And I don't know if the psukim, it came out that the psukim were contradictory or somebody was there both times. They said, but Rebbe, I don't understand. Last time you said that twist ties are mutter, this time you're saying it's usser. He said, no, no, it's a different shaila. The first time he did this. The second time he did this. I mean, twisting it two times, that's mutter. Twisting it three times, that's usser. I don't know if it's true. I don't know if it's not true. But that just shows you the precision of somebody like, you know, Rebbe Yashiv is an incredible, incredible, incredible person. I had a good story with him. I asked him the following. I was in the mirror and I wanted to meet Rebbe Yashiv, so I had to fabricate a question. So the question I fabricated was like this. There are some people, some of your fathers might make Kiddush Shabbos morning on schnapps, and they don't use one of these cups, because if they do, you have the wheel of home. So they use a shot glass. And what do you mean? Don't you need a revius, 3.3 ounces or 3.5 ounces to make Kiddush? Why are they using a shot glass? The answer is because normally a chashava amount is 3.5 ounces, is a revius. But with how do you drink shots of liquor? You drink it by the shot, by 1 ounce. A 1 ounce is chashav. So yes, according to that, if in America, no one ever drinks beer less than a 12-ounce bottle, a can of beer. There's no such thing as drinking less than you buy a can of beer. That's the smallest amount. So should if you make Kiddush on beer, should you need at least 12 ounces? It should not be sufficient to have 3.5 ounces. You should need at least 12 ounces of beer if you make Kiddush on beer. So he said, now let me make Kiddush on a shot glass. So I was in a bind, because that ruined my question. So I said, but according to the Shita that says that you can make Kiddush on a shot glass, the Hasidim hold it, you can. Would you be able to? Would you, according to that opinion, that we go by the Chashivas, based on what you're drinking, in which case by liquor it's a shot, 1 ounce, and not 3.5 ounces, would you, according to that opinion, would you? He said, no. 3.5 ounces is the shear of the revius, that's, you know, that Chazal defined as the important amount, and that's all you need. That was one shot that I asked Rebbe Yashiv. I went back to, that was when I was like 19, 20 then, 20 years old or so then. Then I was back in the mirror a bunch of years later. I was probably around 27. And I, for some reason, some people were going into Rebbe Yashiv, I figured I'd tag along again. And I heard a very interesting question, very applicable. I didn't ask this, but somebody asked, could you make, I said, Rav, there's this wine that has bubbles in it. Meaning, you know, sparkling wine. So could you make Kiddush on it? So Yasha says, what's the difference to the wine if it has bubbles in it or it doesn't have bubbles in it? It's still wine. So you can make Kiddush on sparkly wines. Okay, those are the two shadows I had from Rebbe Yashiv. So in terms of that, reminded me from the twist ties. Halacha l'maisa, why is twist ties not going to be in this issue of the Magen Avram's Chumrah of straining out a piece of metal that we have to investigate. Perhaps it's not really considered a metal bar because it's just, I don't know. It's a good question. We have to, if you could follow up with me, I'd appreciate that. Just send me an email. Yes? Bending a kippah clip would be, if you're bending it in shape or out of shape or to some other shape than it is right now, that would be a awesome. I don't think opening and snapping it open, snapping it closed would be considered this. I think bending it would be. I don't think opening it is. I think that's not changing anything. That's just using. That's how you use it. I don't think, for example, opening up a safety pin, I don't think is going to be considered a problem. It's only if you're going to bend the safety pin. So too, is keep a clip. There's a certain tension that it has that the metal is in a certain shape, and you release the tension, it pops to a different shape. But you're not bending anything. Twist ties. Yeah, I hear, but there you're actually making a permanent change in the shape on some level. I hear, it could be. Aluminum foil. That's not a bar. I hear that. Okay. I'm not sure about tistan. It's all right. Yes.
So just back to the earring.
Yeah.
Some earrings that the leader made, they're made so narrow that in order to put them on, they're intended, it's just very soft metal, so you do bend it a little open to get it into your ear, and then you bend it a little closed to be able to close it.
And you bend the earring a little bit every time you want to put it on, and you unbend it a little bit every time you want to take it off?
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah, basically. You bend it a little bit to get it into your ear, and then you bend it a little bit to be able to close the box every time.
It's not bending.
No, it doesn't. I have a couple earrings, but this doesn't exist. It's a very soft metal.
Like I hear you saying.
So, but the way the manufacturer makes them, maybe it's just an old-fashioned style, maybe, or something. That's just the...
So you're asking what happens if you have a kind of earring that the way you put it on is sort of you bend it a little so that it fits over the earlobe and you unbend it a little bit so you can take it off.
It's not that you're reshaping it, it's that you're doing it every time. But you are reshaping like they're about to do it.
Is that really bending or you're just sort of stretching it? It's hard for me to know. I'm not sure. I don't know the answer. Yeah, I'm not sure. I guess my earring bakias is not at its where it should be. I'm sorry. Yeah. So bobby pin, if you're just fitting it over the hair or the kippah, I think that would be a problem. I think bending it, again, not just using it in a way that it opens a little bit when you stick a lot of hair inside, it opens a little bigger. If you have a thick kippah, that will open a little bigger. But I think if you would actually take your hands and pull the two bobs apart, I think that would be a problem with a bobby pin.
Even if it's made to be so thin, like it's almost inherent in the metal.
I mean, the Magen Avraham was talking about a machat, about a pin that got bent. I think it's thicker than a pin. Yes. I don't know of any problem with aluminum foil or aluminum pans. You're saying maybe when you finish an aluminum pan, could you crush it? I do all the time. But maybe that's because I never learned this. Aluminum is metal.
Yeah, don't put it in microwave.
Let's say you have an aluminum foil pan and you want to like twist it a little bit so it fits in the fridge, right? Yeah, it's an interesting question. If you fold over the edge of the aluminum foil to fit over the lid or something like that, it's hard to imagine that that's usser. Hard to imagine that's usser. Okay, so somebody, please send me an email. I'll have to follow up. John, you'll send me the email?
Yes.
Great.
Okay.
Let's end. Oh, just keep in mind, maybe next time we'll talk about what happens if your lens pops out from your glasses on Shabbos. Will putting it back, reinserting the lens, will that be like a makkah b'patish? You're sort of putting the finishing touch on your glasses. That will start with next week. And then we're going to talk about what about makkah b'patish with food. For example, you have a banana split and you want to put the cherry on top. Is there a greater makkah b'patish putting a finishing touch than that? Or, for example, we got this year, great idea. You bake these Duncan Hines chocolate, you know, chocolate brownies, Duncan Hines that we all are so familiar with. And then you take the icing that we're all so familiar with, just smear on the icing. And then, if you have a Shalom Zachar that week, you sprinkle some blue sprinkles on top, and oh wow, you have a whole blue-themed chocolate, beautiful brownies. And if it's a Kiddush, then you just sprinkle pink. You know, pink sprinkles on top. And if there's a Shalom Zachar and a Kiddush, you just do the same thing. And half you do sprinkle with pink, half you sprinkle with blue, and you're covered. And so could you put those sprinkles on? You're putting the finishing touch on whatever dish you're making. So Bez Hashem, that we'll talk about next week. And included in that, we'll be making seltzer on Shabbos. So stay tuned. Next week again, we'll start Bez Hashem at 7:45 here next Monday night.